live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University. It is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a starting receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It's about that time. Thank you so much for allowing us to be a part of your beautiful Tuesday afternoon, and I do mean beautiful, folks. It's a gorgeous day here in Lansing. The sun is shining, blue skies, 77 degrees, picture perfect, picture perfect. So we are so glad that you are tuned in on this fantastic Tuesday on today's current sports. Got a lot to get to. You know, as promised during the hour yesterday, you know, I want to get to this HBO Real Sports Report. I want to dive into this as they did a really eye-opening piece concerning horse racing here in America and how corrupt and how dirty the horse racing game can be, unfortunately leading to many deaths. And, you know, there's even one statistic throughout the report done by a man by the name of Patrick Patello, who's an upstate New York activist who compiles like a list of racing fatalities nationwide. And he says that there are easily over 2,000 deaths, 2,000 horse deaths every single year here in America when it comes to the sport of horse racing. So I'm going to dive into that report and give you some more disturbing details. And we will welcome live here to Studio West Brian Nielsen, professor in the Department of Animal Science and licensed racehorse trainer, to give us some insight when it comes to his own personal experience in the sport of horse racing and his reaction to this report. Okay, so you don't want to miss that chat. That will lead our hour in just a moment after the headliners, of course. And then in segment B, how about the Michigan Wolverines baseball team? They are now one win away from making history, one win away from winning a national title. They can make that dream come true if they handle business tonight against Vanderbilt. They certainly handled business yesterday in game one of the College World Series championship. Just an amazing story, an amazing story. And we'll recap a bit of what happened last night. And then to close out the show, I'll have some thoughts on the NBA awards that took place yesterday. That was pretty fun to watch. I thought that Shaquille O'Neal did an overall solid job as the host of the evening. There were multiple celebrities in the house, and the big awards were handed out, like Sixth Man of the Year, you know, like Defensive Player of the Year, and also, of course, the night was closed out with the MVP award. We'll give you details and you'll get my thoughts on what took place last night in Los Angeles at the NBA Awards. So a lot to get to. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News and watch and comment below the live stream there. You can also tweet us. Tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. Okay, last night on ESPN, the Michigan Wolverines baseball team defeated Vanderbilt by a score of 7-4. Now just one win away, as I just mentioned. One win away from winning the entire enchilada and becoming the kings of college baseball. Of course, playing in the College World Series. Game 2 will take place tonight at 7 p.m. at TD Ameritrade Park out in Omaha, Nebraska on ESPN. Again, this is a best of 3 series. So again, Michigan has not been the national champion in baseball since 1962. And Tommy Henry, the lefty, he was amazing. Got a chance to catch a bit of that game before I turned on the NBA awards. Tommy Henry, who has been just lights out this postseason for the Wolverines, he was great. And again, Michigan now one win away from his first national title in 57 years, a title that would cap off this magical postseason run after being one of the last 4 teams selected to go to the big dance in the NCAA tournament field. A lot of people forget that. Michigan was one of the last 4 in, and now they are one win away from making history. Just absolutely amazing. More on this historic run from the Wolverines in just a moment, and I'll recap a bit more when it comes to the specifics of how they pulled out game 1. All right, a mid-Michigan summer tradition. The annual Moneyball Pro-Am is almost here. The Summer Basketball League kicks off Thursday night at the Aim High Sports Complex out in Diamonddale, Michigan. It will continue every Tuesday and Thursday night. There will be no game on July 4th, though, because July 4th falls on a Thursday next week. But it will run until August 1st. So opening night, Thursday night, and you can catch 4 games. Yeah, count them. 4 games on that opener Thursday night. The rosters were revealed yesterday on Twitter, courtesy of the Moneyball Twitter feed. And Michigan State's Kyle Arnes, Joshua Langford as well, are not on those rosters. No surprise there. All 3 incoming freshmen, as well as Marquette transfer Joey Hauser, are listed on team rosters, indicating that they will be participating throughout the summer. 4 Michigan Wolverines will also be making an appearance, including starting point guard Xavier Simpson, among those included in the summer league. I posted all of the rosters on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News yesterday. You can also check my Twitter feed for Thursday's game times. And again, also, you can check out the rosters there as well. Also, this news broke yesterday. Tom Izzo, head coach of the Michigan State men's basketball program, he's already given to an expansion project for Spartan Stadium. And he and his family are now giving Michigan State another big contribution, this time to renovate Munn Ice Arena. MSU announced yesterday, courtesy of a press release, that Izzo and his wife, Loopy, are donating $1.1 million for the recently approved addition to the Spartans hockey home. This is what Izzo had to say in a statement. Quote, "Our basketball program is so very fortunate to have the support of many individuals and donors who understand how important facilities and scholarships are to recruiting and competing for championships. I've been going to hockey games since I came to Michigan State, and those games are some of the greatest memories. The Spartan family is fortunate to have Danton Cole leading the hockey program, and we, Loopy and I, are grateful to be able to support our hockey program that is about to take off." So again, that's a direct quote coming from a statement released by Tom Izzo when it comes to this $1.1 million donation to help renovate Munn Ice Arena. All right, Ricky White, a 3-star wide receiver from Georgia, he announced on Monday on Twitter that he will play football for the Michigan State football program in 2020. He is Michigan State's 4th verbal commitment in 2 days and 8th
since June 14th. He's a 6'1", 175-pounder, and White is ranked as the number 162 receiver in the country. That's according to 247 Sports, and the number 98th recruit overall in Georgia. He chose the Spartans over offers from a list that does include schools like Georgia Tech, Louisville, Pittsburgh, Syracuse, West Virginia, and others. White tweeted, quote, "After further consideration, countless conversations, and one extraordinary weekend, I will be committing to Michigan State University." All right, the Detroit Lions. Yeah, a legend of the Honolulu Blue. Barry Sanders, check this. He will highlight the list of celebrities who will tee it up in Wednesday's Pro-Am of the PGA Tour's Rocket Mortgage Classic at the Detroit Golf Club. Sanders will be joined by another Pro Football Hall of Famer, that being the Bus, Jerome Bettis, Detroit native and Super Bowl champ of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who has been a member at the club. So tickets remain available for Wednesday, and Thursday, and Friday. And it looks as though those tickets are going like hotcakes right now. I mean, it's going to be an absolutely fantastic atmosphere this weekend at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. I'm still a little bit salty, though, that Tiger Woods won't be playing in it. But, hey, what are you going to do? Just good to see PGA Tour golf back in the D. All right. The Detroit Tigers are in action tonight, taking on the Texas Rangers at Comerica Park. That begins that series tonight. And also news concerning the former home of the Detroit Pistons, that being the Palace of Auburn Hills. Well, the Palace will soon be demolished to make room for the homes of technology companies and corporations. A joint venture between Pistons owner Tom Gorris and Livonia-based Showstack Brothers and Company have purchased the Palace of Auburn Hills to be redeveloped into 1 million square feet of mixed-use office and research and development space. Pistons made that announcement yesterday. Now, neither financial terms nor a timeline were disclosed. This is a statement coming from Tom Gorris. Quote, "We promised the people of Auburn Hills in Oakland County that we would find a solution that would be good for the community to make positive economic impact. Partnering with a proven, well-respected developer like Showstack Brothers is an important step in delivering on that promise." So, you know, just such a shame, though, because you look at the Palace of Auburn Hills, it's not that old, still in good shape, but it's going to be demolished. So, there you have that. All right, and a quick recap when it comes to what happened last night at the NBA Awards in beautiful Los Angeles, California. The NBA Basketball Executive of the Year went to John Horst of the Milwaukee Bucks. The Twyman Stokes Teammate of the Year Award, and the presenters of that award were Baron Davis, formerly of the Golden State Warriors back in the day, as well as Jaren Jackson Jr., one-and-done prospect coming out of Michigan State University, now balling out for, of course, the Memphis Grizzlies. Jaren gave that award to his former teammate, Mike Conley Jr. The NBA Cares Community Assist Award went to Bradley Beal. That was a really cool montage, and Bradley Beal doing some outstanding things in the community with young men. He also actually had two of his mentees on stage with him, one of whom had never, you know, been on a plane. Oh, I should say, I think he said first class. Not many people had been in first class in the first place. So, but that was really cool. The Hustle Award went to Marcus Smart. The NBA Sportsmanship Award also went to Mike Conley Jr. So they just combined them last night in one ceremony. So the Teammate Award and the Sportsmanship Award both went to Mike Conley. So he accepted both of those awards at the same time last night. Coach of the Year, Mike Budenholzer of course, the Milwaukee Bucks. Sixth Man of the Year, Lou Williams of the LA Clippers. Most Improved Player, Pascal Siakam of the Toronto Raptors. Or I should say the NBA Championship winning Toronto Raptors. Defensive Player of the Year went to Utah's Rudy Gobert. The Rookie of the Year Award went to Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks. And the Most Valuable Player Award went to Giannis Antetokounmpo. And Giannis had such an emotional speech. I didn't even know if he was going to get through it because he was just so emotional. The tears were streaming, just so candid as he accepted that award. And, you know, you got to love that young man. You know, the words that he stated, you know, coming from nothing and, you know, thinking about his dad who passed away. You know, he thinks about his dad every time before he hits that basketball floor. You know, he called his mom a superhero, thanked his brothers, you know, thanked Greece and how they've embraced him and people tuning in from all over the world to watch and support him. Just an amazing speech, an amazing moment that if you don't get emotional, if you did not get emotional last night and watching, you probably don't have a pulse. So congratulations to Giannis and all of those who accepted awards last night. That does it for your current sports quick hit headliners. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. That is the number to call. Go to Facebook.com/WKAR News, and you can comment right below the live stream like a few of you are doing as I speak. And you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the hour, tweet the show at WKAR News.
To see it for ourselves, we went behind the scenes in Mountaineer, outfitted with a hidden camera. We watched as the meat man forced a filly into his trailer, a filly named No Day Off. Her crime? She no longer ran fast enough to win.
What's wrong with her exactly? Does she have an illness or she just doesn't run well anymore? She doesn't run too good.
No Day Off was taken here to a weekly livestock auction in Ohio. There she is, the first one off the truck, and behind her, more racehorses from Mountaineer that were no longer making money. One by one, they were sold for a few $100 each, then packed into a truck and shipped off to slaughter to countries like Canada and Mexico, since slaughtering horses is illegal here in the United States. The process began with a bolt to the brain, designed to knock the horses out. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. Either way, it got worse from there.
Then they're stringing it up by the legs. They're going to hang it up from the ceiling, and they're going to bleed it out right there. If they're lucky, they might be unconscious, but if they miss, they're fully awake for the whole process.
What do you make of that?
Beyond inhumane. I mean, it's like torture, and there's no reason for it.
This is how the horses wound up. The useful parts, anyway. The rest of them went out with the trash.
Okay, it is Tuesday, June 25th, 2019. And again, thank you so much for allowing Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon. And as promised on Monday's Current Sports, I told you I wanted to lead the show with just a shocking, riveting, you know, I run out of words to describe how I felt after watching the latest installment of Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, as it was reported by Bernard Goldberg, who was a part of that HBO Real Sports team. Bernard dove into horse racing here in America, examining racing fatalities. Again, it aired, I want to say, about, you know, 2 weeks ago now, 2 or 3 weeks ago now. And, you know, I just got a chance to see it on Monday morning. And the feature is entitled Raced to Death. And Goldberg, he interviewed a few people to give some different perspectives And you know, it was so eye-opening for me because I didn't know on an annual basis how many horse deaths there are within the sport of horse racing. So immediately after I watched the piece, you know, the first guy that came to mind to give some insight into this was, of course, Dr. Nielsen. Dr. Brian Nielsen, who is a professor here at Michigan State University in the Department of Animal Science and also a licensed racehorse trainer. We had Dr. Nielsen on the show, I want to say around like the Kentucky Derby, to give his thoughts and predictions on who will pull out that victory. And, you know, I emailed Doc, and he was so gracious and kind, and he just walked in. For those watching the live stream, you saw him come in about, you know, a couple minutes ago. First off, Doc, thank you so much for taking some time out this Tuesday to join us here on the show. I know it's a heavy topic, I know.
It is. It's great. First of all, I really appreciate being here. And actually, I appreciate the opportunity to kind of address some of these issues because they are out there. And, you know, some of the stuff is really negative. Some's deserved. Some isn't. So I think we'll have a great conversation here. And I'll let you start out or I can just rattle on with various thoughts.
Well, I want to start here, Dr. Nielsen. When you, first off, I just want to get your initial reaction. Because I know when I emailed you, you hadn't seen it until I sent you a link that kind of gave a synopsis, and, and you just listened to just a snippet. We actually have two more snippets. I'll get to those later on. We've got Connor Mathis behind the glass, engineer of today's current sports. I've got two more sound bites that I'll be rolling in during this conversation at various points. But just I want to get your just gut reaction after reading and hearing and watching this story from Bernard Goldberg. What were your thoughts?
You bet. And all I caught was the clip. I haven't found the actual thing, but I've heard a lot about it. I've read some articles.
Got to have HBO
it.
Too, right?
Exactly.
That's another thing.
But first of all, the clip that you played was interesting because it told me there was an agenda, of course, as to what was happening. So very, very few racehorses, particularly like what they talked about, this individual who sounds she just wasn't slow enough. The idea of shipping a horse to slaughter for that doesn't make any sense because these horses, they're athletic horses, and they go on to great careers afterwards. For those of you who are live streaming, I was trying to pull up my Facebook thing, like some of my former racehorses who have their own Facebook page.
Yeah.
And we have more connection here, so I wasn't able to do it. But,
right.
You know, every horse I've ever raced personally, you know, after it was done and went on to a different career as a hunter jumper, dressage horse, barrel horse, trail horse, things like that.
Right.
So what they were saying there doesn't make any sense because those horses typically, I mean, a lot of mine, like $2,500 is what they're sold for after they're done racing as a usable horse. So they're saying this perfectly sound, great horse, just slow, is selling for a few hundred dollars. That doesn't make any economical sense.
And right, because that snippet you heard was Bernard. It was near the middle to end of the piece.
Yes.
And, you know, he's talking with a young woman who works at, I'm not sure the facility that she works at. I can't pinpoint specifically off the top of my head. But she goes on to say that if a horse isn't performing well and is losing race after race after race, that horse then goes to be sold at an auction for, again, you heard, a few hundred bucks. And the horses who aren't sold, who have underperformed on the racetrack, those are shipped out of the U.S. because slaughtering is illegal here in the U.S., And they're killed in that way. And it's really disturbing footage too. But
oh, absolutely.
Have you heard of that kind of thing going on, Doc?
Well, first of all, Temple Grandin, who she's actually on faculty at Colorado State. She's an animal behaviorist, welfareist, and she's done a lot of work in this area. She's actually gone to horse slaughter plants when they were up and running. Mm-hmm. And and Temple Grandin, some people might know, there was an HBO thing. She received some big award, whatever. She's
okay.
Very famous for a lot of people because she's autistic.
Gotcha.
And so she views herself like being able to view the world as animals view it, a different type of vision. Anyway, but she said, yeah, very, very few, like minor percentage of the horses going through auction barns like that were racehorses. And so we actually have the evidence that that's not the case. And everybody who's intimately aware of what happens in racing, that isn't the case. Now, regarding what happens, Temple Grandin, she was speaking here at Michigan State, and this was dealing with the whole issue of horse slaughter. And I remember her vividly saying, there are things worse than death. And she mentioned that once we ban horse slaughter in the United States, and most people, we love horses. You don't want them to go to slaughter. And so you think this is a good thing to ban it. But then what happened is there are some people out there who are not good people. Every industry has bad people. I'm sure there's some talk show hosts that are horrible.
I got a laundry list, Brian.
But there's always some bad ones, and they will ship their horses to Mexico or Canada. And I don't think the slaughter in Canada is as bad. Mexico, it can be actually very bad, and the way they slaughter them is horrible. When it was done here in the United States, it was a humane thing. It was captive bulls. Anybody who's trained properly, you don't miss. I'm certain it could happen.
This is the thing, too. I see this a lot, too. In races, if a horse somehow, breaks an ankle, shatters a bone, something like that, it's just so hard to heal because there's so much weight. And you see, I've seen during races, horses, they get euthanized right on the spot, right? That's what happens because there's no other way.
Yeah, and that's a great topic. I mean, it absolutely does happen. And I want to state most of us that are involved with racing believe one fatality is too many. And we'll get to Santa Anita and what's happened out there, and I have thoughts on that.
Exactly, because I have a snippet from that in just a moment, but continue,
So the deal is, but sometimes when a horse has that type of injury, they are an animal that is used to running. And unlike a human patient where you can say, okay, you need to keep the weight off that leg, they don't do that. That just is not their deal.
Right.
And there's been many, many, many instances of people trying to do the surgery on the horses to repair the limbs.
What are the chances of recovery when a horse does something like that?
It's really tough. I look at Ruffian. You may remember that name from many years ago. She broke down in a match race, and they did the surgery on her. And the surgery was successful, but then when she started to come to, then she got to thrashing, and she destroyed the leg. And that's it. You can't rationalize to them that you have to be calm. So, Barbaro was a famous horse. He won the Kentucky Derby in the Preakness. He broke a hind leg, very strange circumstance. And they did everything they could. And on a couple of occasions, I've had dinner with the individual, the surgeon who did the operation on it. I mean, they did everything they could for this horse. But the problem is a horse is not used to standing on three legs. And so you develop other problems. And so they eventually had to put him down. Mm-hmm. So as harsh as it sounds, when that happens, sometimes that is the kindest thing. And again, mm-hmm. it's horrible to even have to talk about. And I've actually based my whole career starting in 1990 on trying to find ways to prevent injuries to performance horses because there's nothing that makes me more sick.
Exactly. All right. I want to play a snippet here. Connor has it queued up because Bernard Goldberg, Doc, he also interviewed Patrick Butello, who is an upstate New York activist. He compiles a list of racing fatalities nationwide through Freedom of Information Act request to state racing regulators and claims that there are an alarming rate of horse deaths each year within the sport of horse racing. Here's a clip from that.
In fact, industry insiders say racing in America is at least five times deadlier than places like this. You've had how many horses in almost 20 years die under your care?
None.
Zero.
Zero.
Thoroughbred trainer Gina Rarick is an American, but says she'd never work in the American horse racing industry. Instead, she works in and around Paris at tracks like the famed Chantilly Racecourse, where here and across the rest of the racing world, they take a much different approach to the sport. The biggest single factor that separates the United States from France and Europe is what?
Is medication. That's the biggest difference between American racing and racing elsewhere in the world.
While some trainers in America drug their horses with just about everything under the sun, from legal drugs that mask injuries to illegal drugs like morphine, steroids, even Viagra.
Morphine, steroids, even Viagra. So that was Connor's oopsie there. That was not, of course, as you heard, Patrick Butello from the upstate New York activist who tracks fatalities within the sport of horse racing. Doc, that was actually Goldberg when he traveled to France. And he spoke with, as you just heard in that soundbite, Gina Rarick, who trains horses. And she says that medication is the biggest difference that separates what's happening out there in France and how safe it is out in France compared to that of America. She claims that international horse racing over there is five times more safer than that here in America. And then she goes on, you know, you heard Goldberg bring up the drugs and, you know, how her horses are in horse racing over there. They're immediately tested for drugs in their system. And if you're found to have drugs in a horse's system, you're banned. Your card is gone. You can't race anymore. Viagra is one of the drugs that are found in some horses here in America. Well, how do you respond to that, Doc?
So I've been all over the world, been on every continent except Antarctica. Not a lot of horse racing there. I've not been to the races in France, but I will address some other things. Now, first of all, I'll give you my little history here in the United States. So I got my exercise rider's license in 89 and then eventually got my trainer's license in 97. I spent a good portion of my life at the track. Judge me if you want. In person, I remember only one time witnessing a horse die on the track, and that was August of 1990. I actually was in the track kitchen. We were watching the monitor. A horse clipped heels, which means it got too close to the horse in front of it. It tripped. It fell. It broke its neck right there. Nobody had to euthanize it. It died. That was tragic. It was horrible. But I have never in all of my time at the track seen a horse break down and be killed. Now, that being said, there are certainly many examples I can list for you of very prominent races televised where horses break down. And I have some theories on that. But what it does is it certainly gives us this idea that, wow, it happens all the time. It doesn't. Now, I'm going to say again, one is too many. But it doesn't, because I've been to a lot of races and I just have not seen it in the United States. Now, That being said, when I was in Northern Ireland, no shame to my Irish folks. I have lots of good friends over there in Ireland, Northern Ireland, was at some point-to-point races. And in one day, I saw three horses die. I was like, I don't want to come back here anymore.
Why? Why did they?
Now, these were like steeplechases, so it's a little bit different because they're going over jumps. And I heard some various arguments as to what was causing the issues. All I know is I saw more horses die in one day over in Europe than I did my whole entire life here in the States. So I question the statement. And again, the people who put that thing together, they have an agenda. They want to get rid of horse racing. I understand that if that's not your thing. And what they fail to recognize is most people do care tremendously about horses. The whole topic of medications.
Yeah, how prevalent? I'm curious. How prevalent is the use of drugs as a means to enhance the performance of a said horse or to medicate to give a quick fix so that a horse can go out there and run a race real quick and then that problem, of course, persists. How prevalent is that based on your experience within the sport, Doc?
I would say way too prevalent.
You've seen this happen.
Absolutely. And I think, jumping ahead in our schedule here a little bit, that some of the issues that we're having at Santa Anita is certain types of medications. And I've been on a soapbox for a long time around corticosteroid use. And I'll give you an example about that.
Please.
Corticosteroids, if you inject it into a joint, it takes away the pain, it takes away the inflammation. You have not healed that joint. In a few days, you know, or even less, the horse looks and feels wonderful, but you've not cured that joint. But to everybody involved, it looks like that joint is cured because the horse looks sound, meaning not lame at all.
Right.
And if anything I accomplish in my career makes an impact, it would be getting this word out about that. And even with humans, you know, I had a shoulder injury and the doctors wanted to inject corticosteroids in there. I'm like, no, I'm too young. If I'm 85 and you want to make me more comfortable, that's fine. I'm 51, and if you do it to me now, I'm going to be stupid because now it'll feel good and I'll injure it worse. And that's the situation that's happening. Mm-hmm. Who's the person to blame on that? Well, it's actually lack of education because most people don't get it. Most owners don't understand the damage that goes with corticosteroids. Most trainers don't do it. Mm-hmm. Even the veterinarians that are doing this, I don't think they get it. One, they look like a superhero because that horse goes sound. But they haven't thought about the fact that even if there are some healing properties, and if you dive into the research literature, there'll be some people that says, well, it might do this. But, you know, I look at the other literature that says it inhibits chondrocyte metabolism, that's cartilage cells. So their ability to repair that joint is inhibited, and you've made that problem look like it's disappeared.
So is this also, Doc, a problem of oversight as well? shouldn't these horses be checked for drugs after they race, or is that a thing? What happens? How does this happen in horse racing, where a horse is allowed to have these things in the system and still race?
I don't know about the testing for that. First of all, you have to have rules against it in order to bother testing for it.
Right. Are there rules that say, is there testing that takes place, like a boxer,
there is
so
absolutely a lot of drug testing.
Okay, there is.
A lot of it. If you have a horse win a race, it's going to get tested. And they will typically do the horse that wins and then maybe one or two other horses in the race.
But not every horse is. Okay.
Not every horse. Under most races, they don't. Some of the big time races, every horse will get tested, but that's certainly not the normal average daily race. And they also, they've started this much more recently, but started out of competition racing or testing, where they can go to your barn, even if your horse is not racing that day, they can test it because they understand we have a problem. So I agree with those people that we have a problem. I don't know. The breakdowns, though, I'm thinking, I don't think our numbers.
Okay.
And see, that's where I just have a little bit of an issue with.
You've got some caution there because of that.
Because they're spinning it a little bit. But I would absolutely agree that there is a problem with the medications. Pain is there for a reason.
Right.
Pain says don't do it. And when we take that, and that's a lesson for human athletes or just anybody. If you have pain, stop. That's your best treatment. And we try all kinds of other treatments to mask or get rid of the pain. Mm-hmm. No. Pain is mother's nature way of saying stop it.
Exactly.
And if you get rid of that pain, for instance, with a horse, they'll run as hard as they can because they have nothing stopping them because the pain's not there.
Right. But it's not healthy for the horse.
And you do it too much. Right. And that's. And I would say in the past, I believe that's been our number one cause of breakdowns. But
yeah, and that's a point that they make here in the piece. And I got some more numbers for you. What I want to do is, Connor, I want to open our phone lines, 517-355-WKAR. If you've got a question for Dr. Brian Nielsen about this topic, call in 517-355-9527. You can also comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News. I want to hit our first break. When we come back, I want to play one more snippet that addresses the estimated amount of deaths here in America within the sport of horse racing. And I want to get Doc's thoughts on that and so much more. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, folks, the center of today's Current Sports is on the HBO Real Sports special that was released about 2 or 3 weeks ago now, centered on racehorsing deaths here in America. It's a piece done by Real Sports correspondent Bernard Goldberg. We've been tackling that live here in studio with Brian Nielsen. Doc. Professor in the Department of Animal Science and licensed racehorse trainer. And I want to segue now into what is happening out in Santa Anita. And it's pretty disturbing out in California, as it's been reported and reported pretty extensively by many, many publications out there. I'm reading a stat from L.A., from the L.A. Times right now, that is stating that 30 horses have now died out at Santa Anita. 30 horses. And real quick here, I want to play one last snippet here in this conversation. This comes from Patrick Botello, upstate New York activist, who has compiled, you know, this list of racing fatalities via FOIA request. And he claims that this number is pretty staggering. I'll just let you listen to it for yourself when it comes to the amount of horses that have been that have died within the sport of horse racing here in America.
But this much is known. What happened to those horses at Santa Anita is just the tip of an iceberg the public knows virtually nothing about.
Santa Anita, since late December, more than 20 deaths. How unusual is that?
It's not unusual at all.
Really?
They have averaged at Santa Anita 50 dead racehorses a year going back to 2007.
How many deaths a year at Santa Anita?
50. 50 dead racehorses.
How come we don't hear about that?
No one has covered it.
But he has. Patrick Betuelo, who lives not far from the historic Saratoga racetrack in upstate New York. Once he was a fan of horse racing until he says he started to notice a pattern, a tidbit of news about a death at one track, then at another.
Oh, a falling there.
And another. And then the one-time fan became an activist. Now, Betuelo, a former restaurant owner, runs a website that logs racehorse deaths at tracks all across the country. And if you think 23 deaths at Santa Anita is a lot, listen to the numbers he's uncovered.
Easily over 2,000 horses are killed racing or training on U.S. tracks every year. Over 2,000.
I would venture to say that people watching us right now would be shocked by that number.
They should be sickened by that number.
So he believes 2,000 deaths, based on his research. Dr. Brian Nielsen here live in studio with us in the Department of Animal Science here at Michigan State University and licensed racehorse trainer. 2,000, Doc. How do you respond to what you just heard there?
So I don't have numbers at my disposal to be able to refute it, but it seems... Now, that was 2,000 per year. Is that what
per
he
year.
Was saying?
Yeah.
So, and here's what I'm trying to recall is the number of new registered thoroughbreds each year. It's gone down dramatically over the recent years, but I think 2007, when it was kind of up there, was like maybe 35,000. Mm-hmm. And that's just the number of registered ones. That's, so, you know, 2,000, let's say all of those would end up racing, which doesn't happen because some will go to other things. That doesn't make any sense. But I'm not saying it's wrong because I don't have the numbers. And I'll also state, obviously, this guy's an activist. And actually, I'm kind of on his side. I'm an activist, too. And I think both of us would like to get that number down to zero. We're doing it different ways. He'd like to get rid of horse racing. I just want to find ways that we don't have these injuries. But we're probably more in line with each other's thinking than you might guess.
Santa Anita.
Let's talk Santa Anita.
30 deaths this year alone.
Sickening.
And you heard what Patrick just stated. He, you know, according to his research, out at Santa Anita, 50 horses per year have passed away. What is happening there?
So I'll tell you what they are claiming. And right from the beginning, I was kind of calling bull on it. They had a very wet, rainy spring. Hey, Michigan, us too.
Right.
And they were saying, you know, track conditions are what was causing that. And where that could potentially have been the truth is if there's a base, a very firm base underneath the cushion to the track. Now, so you have the sand that covers the base and the base is the firm part. And if that was destroying the base where it was getting very uneven or holes were created, horses could theoretically take a bad step. And every once in a while that happens at a track and instantly the riders feel it because you're going around there and the horse takes a bad step. Mm-hmm. And the riders typically are like, nope, we're done. We're not going to race again until that's fixed. I've never heard any riders mention anything about that. But that's what the track or people have wanted to claim.
And that's so, what they're claiming. That's the excuse as to why 30 deaths.
Time. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, you idiots. I hate to be that blunt. A sound horse is not going to go break down as a result. I'll look at it. So I raced many years up here at Mount Pleasant, up there at Central Michigan. Not where Central Michigan is. They don't have the track there, but yeah. Mount Pleasant Meadows track right up there. It's basically a county fairground type of track. It's not fancy and whatever. And I remember us, myself, and I think some of the stewards and the starter having the discussion, they couldn't remember a horse ever breaking down at Little Mount Pleasant Meadows, where the racetrack probably gets used for demolition derbies and all that stuff,
right,
too. So no way is a sound horse going to break down just because the track is a little uneven. And some of these horses are breaking down during just easy works, easy gallops. You don't break bones as a result. Now, initially, when these reports started coming out, I was thinking, again, corticosteroids, because I figured some vets getting really happy and has people thinking, oh, we can cure any problem by injecting it. as the numbers started to go up, it's like, no, that's not corticosteroids, and that's not happening. And there is a drug called bisphosphonate.
Bisphosphonate. What does that do?
It is a drug that's actually used for humans quite a bit to help prevent osteoporosis. And what it does is bone is constantly changing. It's constantly undergoing repair. You know, think about our roads here in Michigan. You got to fix the potholes. Yeah. So you take out the bad stuff, put it back in. So we have osteoblasts, which is a type of bone cell that builds bone. And we have osteoclasts, which is a type of bone cell that removes bone. When you administer bisphosphonates, what happens is it decreases osteoclasts. They have apoptosis. The cells, the osteoclasts die, so you don't have as much bone removal occurring. Now, for osteoporosis, that's good. You want to slow down the process of bone loss. But the problem is you need to have this constant repair going on. You need to take away that bone. Otherwise, you have Michigan roads that are all cracked up and full of holes. And you add more bone on top of it, more asphalt on top of it, but you've not repaired that damage. You need to remove that. So I am strongly guessing that there are some individuals that thought, this drug makes sense. It increases bone density. It prevents bone loss. Let's give it to horses to make bone stronger. In theory, that sounds like a great idea. But the problem is they don't understand bone dynamics. You have to remove the damaged stuff. And when you never remove that damaged stuff, that bone doesn't repair little damage and it builds up. And that's why you can have a horse that's just going very slow break its leg. I would bet a lot of money that's the issue.
Wow.
Now,
okay.
Not confirmed,
but if you had to guess, that's what you think.
I would put a lot of money, and I don't bet much.
Right. Even though you're in horse racing, we talked about that last time. But yeah, that's so insane. You know, again, it goes back to the point that we were talking about, you know, when it comes to the drugs being administered to horses, looking for a quick fix, not really addressing the issue just so that you can have horses out there racing when it's not to the benefit of that horse. So,
On top of this, the Grayson Jockey Club, which is Thoroughbred organization, they have about a week ago released a call for grants addressing the issue of bisphosphonates.
Okay. So this is a big problem.
So those of us are on the inside, some of us have figured out that this is probably the problem. And I fully expect that when it gets figured out, and the big issue is it's not you give it one time and the effect lasts for a few weeks.
Right.
We don't know how long the effect lasts. And you could administer to a horse 2 years ago and it might still have the same effect. And you just don't know when it's going to give. And also some of the people racing these horses, they may not have been the ones who gave the horse the drug.
Right.
Okay. That's a problem.
So with a minute left here, Doc, just putting a wrap on the conversation here, what needs to happen to make horse racing safer here in America so that stuff like what we're seeing out in Santa Anita is not happening?
It's education. A lot of the people that are doing it, they're trying to do the right thing. You know, another thing, we have these, we make matters even worse. For instance, we all think speed is bad, but if you don't get speed, then the horse's bones get weaker. It's weird how it works, but the bone tries to adapt to whatever stresses are placed on it. So by people trying to be overly cautious and not stressing the bone, you actually make it weaker too. What we do need to do is get the word out. And actually, that's my job. And that's what I've been trying actively to do. And that's kind of one of my lifelong goals is getting this word out to folks.
Well, you're doing that by being here on Current Sports, and we really appreciate it. Again, Dr. Brian Nielsen, Department of Animal Science professor and licensed racehorse trainer. Doc, always good seeing you, and thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
All right, let's start our final break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on this Tuesday edition of Current Sports. I'll address Michigan being one win away from a national title in the sport of baseball. Can you believe that? As well as a quick take on what happened last night out in L.A. at the NBA Awards. You are listening to Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Just had a very educational chat with Dr. Brian Nielsen, prof in the Department of Animal Science here at Michigan State University, licensed race horsing trainer since the late 90s. You know, real quick, behind the glass, Connor Mathis, you've been engineering today's current sports. Listening to those sound bites from the HBO report, I don't even know if you saw it, but you at least heard those snippets. Hearing what Doc had to say, has it changed your view on horse racing? And what was your view in the first place, if so?
My view has always been like, yeah, there's some risks to the animal, but, you know, I don't think an outright ban just seems like taking it to the most extreme. Yeah, from what Doc has said there, it sounds like there's some reforms that need to take place, especially on the educational side and the medication testing side of the sport. But I think all in all, it's one of those things that just needs a deeper look into it, and rather than an outright ban. I think calling for an outright ban of a sport in any case is extreme. There are precautions that can you know, make the sport safer. But you know, it was awful, some of the stuff that you heard on that Real Sports.
There was one big takeaway that's pretty obvious what needs to happen to make the sport safer, especially when you see 30 horses this year alone, and what we're like at the halfway point of the year. You know, we still got six more months of 2019, and 30 horses have already died. There's an obvious first step that needs to take place, and there needs to be, you know, the umbrella of horse racing needs to do a better job at regulating the sport. There needs to be testing, drug testing, immediately, maybe before a race and after a race, and those who had, you know, those horses who have something in their system, those trainers, those owners need to be banned from the sport, as number one. And number two, there needs to just not before a race, but year round, there needs to be more regulation within horse racing here in America, period, point blank period.
Or, you know, or at least like some accountability, because in all these cases of the horse dying, you never hear a follow-up story about how they're looking into this trainer, the jockey, the owner, who all these
an
other people.
Right.
Yeah, you know, all these other people who are involved with the animal. I mean, it's not like the jockey is doing everything for the horse, or it's not like the owner is doing everything for us. There's so many parts in it. It's basically like managing a team. Like, it's not like, one person is not managing, you know, the entire Cleveland Cavaliers or whatever. It's a bunch of people. So, you know, I think there needs to be more accountability there.
Definitely. I'm with you. More accountability, more regulation. And I know, you know, Doc was certainly in a tough spot there, because, you know, he's been involved with the sport for so long and loves it. And then you hear a report like that, and man, it's kind of jarring, you know? So he did a great job, though. Much thanks to Dr. Brian Nielsen. Okay, one down, one to go. The Michigan baseball team is on the brink of a national championship, which is just mind-boggling, especially because, you know, I sat back and Connor, I totally forgot that this is a team that barely got into the big dance. They were one of the last four teams to be chosen to make it to the College World Series, and now they're on the brink of history, which makes this feat even more insane. So, you know, in 1962, that was U of M's first College World Series. That came against Texas. And, of course, this year it was against Texas Tech. And that year they beat Florida State. This year the same as well. So there's like some eerie, you know, comparisons that you can make when it comes to this possible national championship team to years past in college baseball history for Michigan. So it was a decisive, this thing wasn't even close. 7-4, there was not one point in that game where I said to myself, oh boy, Michigan's in trouble now. Michigan is handling this series so well, this run so well, and Tommy Henry, this dude has been lights out. He has been lights out, and it just doesn't get rattled. So we'll have more extensive conversation on this topic tomorrow, especially if they get the job done and do handle Vandy tonight. If not tonight, they got an opportunity. Again, it's a best of three series. So game three will take place on Wednesday night at 7 p.m. So we'll see what happens. Ben is saying hopefully Vandy can bounce back tonight. Of course, Ben is an avid MSU fan, so he has let it be known countless times on our Facebook page that he does not want to see Michigan win this whole thing. When it comes to the NBA awards, any surprises for you, Connor? I thought that it went to the right guy. Again, a lot of people forget this is based on the regular season, not what takes place in the playoffs. Giannis Antetokounmpo was amazing. The Milwaukee Bucks had the best record in the league, and you take Giannis off that team and they do not accomplish that feat. He is so likable. He's so passionate. He works his tail off. He is becoming my favorite player in the league. The MVP went to the right guy.
I like all the awards except for Coach of the Year. I think Nick Nurse got robbed. Nick Nurse.
Well, again, it's based on what you do in the regular season. That's the thing.
Okay, but as
Mike Budenholzer, best record in the league with Milwaukee. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
It is impressive. My counterpoint to that is they got rid of their franchise centerpiece and then were top of the East. So, I mean, towards the top of the East. But, I mean, that for me is a little bit more impressive than, you know, the winning all. But I understand. It was close, but I would have picked Nick Nurse personally.
This is the counter to that, just to play devil's advocate. I thought at least Nick Nurse should have been nominated. But Dwayne Casey helped build this Toronto championship as well. Nick came in. It wasn't like the cupboard was bare. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
And then you add to the cupboard Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, you know what I mean? Marc Gasol comes over, so yeah. I love Nick. Nick is a great basketball mind, but I think they got it right with that.
I'll say this. I was pissed that it took until 11:30 Eastern for me to figure out who the MVP is. Can we make this, like, you know, a little bit quicker? I mean, come on now.
It dragged, didn't it? It did. And then there was just all the highlight montages. That's what really extended it. It's like, do we have to have a video for everything? Like, my goodness, I saw these highlights countless times during the season. So, at the end of the day, though, it was cool, and I thought Shaq did a good job. How would you grade Shaq's performance 1-10 hosting last night? I give him an 8.
He did all right. I mean, Shaq's entertained, so, I mean, he's always going to be on the upper end of that.
Yeah, I give him an 8. He did a solid job.
I like that they roasted James Harden, though. That was hilarious.
Hasan Minhaj from Netflix, he went in. He said, skip this, I'm going in right now. He was amazing. All right, folks. Again, thanks to Dr. Brian Nielsen and to all of you out there for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Be easy, people.